Huckabee, investigative reporter and author Peter Schweizer, author Karen Kingsbury, actor Scott Reed, plus music from Billy Gaines. That's Trey Corley in the Music City Connection. And I'm your announcer, Keith Bilbrey. And now, here's Mike Huckabee!
Welcome, everyone. Very glad to have you here tonight. I want to begin with something rather serious. On March the 19th, agents of the Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms Agency, ATF, went to the home of Brian Malinowski, the executive director of the Little Rock, Arkansas Airport, and as such, happens to be the highest paid city employee in Little Rock. The agents arrived at his home in 10 separate vehicles at 6 a.m., an hour before sunup. They came to his personal home in one of the nicest neighborhoods in all of Little Rock. We were able to exclusively obtain the video. This is from a neighbor's security camera of the police vehicles arriving. No one has seen this before other than the family. We also obtained from the Malinowski family the video from their Ring doorbell camera, which you're seeing now. After covering up his Ring doorbell, they proceeded to break down his front door and entered his home. Mr. Malinowski and his wife were startled by the noise, as you could imagine, as well as the intrusion. Mr. Malinowski grabbed a pistol that he kept by his bed and went into the hallway where he saw several individuals in the darkness. He fired at their feet. They, in turn, fired at him, striking him in the head, even as his wife was only a couple of steps behind. He died from the gunshots. I am as supportive as I can be of law enforcement. I back the blue. And I give benefit of the doubt to the police officer when one is accused of wrongdoing. Let's be honest, their job is a difficult and a dangerous one. But incidences like this are deeply disturbing and demand transparency and answers. And the answers have not been forthcoming. The federal agents were not there to arrest him. No charges against him had been filed. They were there to execute a search warrant. They ended up executing a citizen in his own home. According to an affidavit, which was the basis of the search warrant and the search warrant itself, which are the only items that have been released to the public, Mr. Malinowski was suspected of violating the so-called gun show loophole, which allows private citizens to sell or buy firearms to other private citizens for their own personal use. And in that application, a federal firearms license is not required unless the person is acting as an actual dealer. But where that line is has never been defined in the law, and it's purely subjective. Malinowski was a gun and coin collector hobbyist. He regularly attended gun shows and set up a table to buy and sell guns and coins. The ATF had placed a tracker on his vehicle. They even went undercover to his table to try and purchase firearms from him. But on March the 19th, he had not been accused or charged with any crime of any kind. One of the attorneys who served as chief legal counsel for me when I was governor was later a U.S. attorney. He's now representing the Malinowski family to get answers regarding the armed raid on the home at 6 a.m. that resulted in his fatal shooting. The ATF has been strangely silent in all of this. Body cameras are required to be worn by agents in such a raid, but no footage has been released. In fact, no footage has even been acknowledged to exist. Were they wearing the required body cameras? Did they announce their presence prior to breaking down the door and entering? Did they give an adequate amount of time for the person inside to respond before breaking down the door, which is required under such circumstances? Why didn't they simply stop him as he backed out of his driveway or even find him at work? He's in a very public place, and he's a very public person. And why 6 a.m. when it was still dark and the occupants of the home were likely asleep? It was a search warrant, not an arrest warrant. And why were 10 police vehicles and multiple agents needed to search his home, and for what were they searching? The federal agencies have failed to provide any answers that his family and, frankly, the public have a right to know. I want to be on the side of law enforcement. I want officers and agents to take every measure to protect themselves. But should law enforcement escalate a search warrant to the level of a hostage rescue? And is there a trend to use excessive force to carry out legitimate law enforcement duties, perhaps as a way to intimidate people with a show of force that is more a military action than a police action? Right here on this show, we've talked with Peter Navarro, a 74-year-old economist who was arrested at the door of an airplane that he was boarding in Washington to travel to Nashville in order to appear on our show. He lives 50 yards from the front door of the FBI. So why did they wait until he was at the airplane boarding door to publicly arrest him, handcuff him, and put him in leg shackles? Just last week, Steve Baker, a journalist with Blaze TV, was on this show. He told of his arrest, bound in leg irons, all of this happening 3 years after he covered the January 6 riots at the Capitol. You may remember a few weeks ago, we had Paul Vaughn on the show, a father of six. And he came to describe his arrest at 7 o'clock in the morning at his home when four cars of federal agents arrived at his home and handcuffed him in front of his children. What did he do? He prayed and sang in protest at an abortion clinic near Nashville some 3 years earlier. Tonight, I call on the ATF and the Department of Justice to provide answers as to why people are having their homes raided by SWAT teams for the mere suspicion of process or paperwork crimes. And what is the justification to break down a door at 6 a.m. and shoot a citizen in the head? And did the agents themselves follow the law that requires body cameras and announcing of their presence and their intention? If so, release the video. And if not, why not? Who will be held accountable? If you haven't done it recently, read the Bill of Rights. It wasn't written to give the government the right to break into your home and shoot you. Every single one of the 10 amendments constituting the Bill of Rights explicitly limits the government in order to protect your freedom. And some people at the highest levels of the federal government need to read the Bill of Rights very carefully, and they need to obey them, or else they are the ones who need to have their homes raided before daylight and marched off in shackles. My first guest tonight is the founder and president of the Government Accountability Institute, which has been exposing government corruption and misuse of taxpayer money for over a decade. He's a New York Times best-selling author four times over. His latest book has him calling out China's blatant attack on our country. From the seemingly innocent app, TikTok, all the way to a direct involvement in America's fentanyl crisis, he pulls no punches. Please welcome the author of Blood Money, Why the Powerful Turn a Blind Eye While China Kills Americans, one of our favorite guests. Welcome back, Peter Schweizer. Peter, it's great to have you back. Every time you come out with a book, I say we got to have Peter on because you discover things that no one else has been able to get to. And in this book, you talk about that China is not just sort of tinkering around the edges with the United States.
Yeah.
It's a full-scale assault on our country and its people.
Yeah.
Give us some idea. What exactly are they doing?
Well, the way I look at it is, and the way China looks at it, they are at war with the United States already. They call it disintegration warfare, and it's designed to fragment or disintegrate American society. And if you look at what's been going on the last 5 years the social disruption, the violence, some of these social movements like the trans movement that have emerged. I'm not saying China created them, but China has enhanced them and fanned the flames. So, for example, you look at the rise in violence on America's street. We've had this phenomenon from 2018 to the present where there's been more of a 1,200% increase in the rate of machine gun fire on the streets of America. Where does this come from? Well, beginning in 2018, China started smuggling into the United States these small devices. They're called Glock switches or auto sear switches, highly illegal. They convert a Glock handgun to a fully automatic machine gun. And who is China smuggling them to? Criminal gangs and drug dealers. So that's one of the reasons we have more violence in America's streets. If you look at some of the social, the angry social protest movements, whether it was in 2020 or the current ones, the pro-Hamas protests that we're seeing, they're really being carried out by two groups which have ties to China. They pledge their allegiance to China, and they're driving a lot of these angry social protests. And then if you look at an issue like the trans movement that kind of emerged out of nowhere, we found out that two of the biggest funders of that movement are actually billionaires that are based in China. And by the way, Governor, they don't advocate for those positions in China itself. They're only pushing that agenda in America. And I think it's because they know and recognize it's a divisive issue that can really tear us apart.
You know, Peter, in light of what you've just outlined and discovered in your research, I'm having to wonder, why is the federal government breaking down the doors of American citizens, as I just discussed, instead of going after some of these bad actors from China who are trying to destroy the very fabric of the United States and its people?
America's on fire. These things are happening. China's holding an empty can of gasoline, and our leaders are watching it happen. And the reason is at least some of them are compromised. They have financial entanglements with China, which preclude them from dealing with this because it would be deeply embarrassing and cost them a lot of money.
And Peter, you know, I'm listening to you and I'm thinking, but every time I turn on the mainstream media, they tell me that it's Russia, Russia, Russia. They're the ones that are behind all of this stuff. You're telling us that your research indicates that a lot of the darkness coming into this country is coming not from Russia, maybe some, but the bulk of it is China.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, look, I'm not saying that Russia doesn't present problems, but Russia's a declining power. Russia's having a hard time with Ukraine. China is the ascendant power, and they are massively involved in sort of every aspect of what's going on. And they seek to weaponize things, not just to cause us political harm, Governor, but to actually kill Americans. Look at what happened during 2020, during COVID, not just the origins of the virus, but China knew for 3 months before they told us that they knew that this was a virus and that it was transmittable from person to person. But they waited 3 months to tell us that that was the case. Why did they do that? During that 3 months, they cornered the market on masks and medical equipment that doctors could use to protect themselves in treating. That led to more Americans dying. They pushed false narratives during COVID that led to Americans getting mistreatments and dying. So China is actually doing things now that are killing Americans, not even to mention the fentanyl crisis. We now have the leading cause of death for young people under the age of 45 is fentanyl. And this is something that is weaponized by China. People focus on the drug cartels, but the drug cartels are the junior partners, the senior partners here of the Chinese government, which control every aspect of this poison that is killing so many people.
I want to get right back to that when we come back from the break. And Peter, it always amazes me when one of your books come out, and this is one that is stunning, and some of the insights every American needs to understand and be familiar with. You'll have a better understanding of what is happening in our culture and why it's happening. We're going to have a whole lot more with Peter. There's just too much to cover, not to. So, Keith, if you will remind our viewers who else is coming up on the show tonight, we'll take a break and be back with Peter Schweitzer.
Well, still to come, author Karen Kingsbury and actor Scott Reeves discuss their new movie. And be sure to stick around for music from two-time Dove Award winner Billy Gaines right here on Huckabee. Go to my MikeHuckabee.com and sign up for his free newsletter. And follow at GovMikeHuckabee on X.
And welcome back. We're visiting with Peter Schweizer. We're talking about his brand new book. It's about China and their involvement in what's happening in our country. It is a, by the way, the number one New York Times bestseller in the country right now. And let me tell you something. If the New York Times acknowledges that Peter Schweizer's book is number one, it must be overwhelming number one. They would never have allowed it to get to number one otherwise. There's a reason people are wanting to read this book. They're learning things they did not realize. You mentioned just before the break the fentanyl issue. And most people don't realize. They think, well, it's coming across the southern border. Mm-hmm. But that's not where it came from.
That's right. That's not where it originated. And I think the other thing that people don't understand is that fentanyl, the vast majority of people that die of fentanyl poisoning don't even know they're taking fentanyl. It's a college student who's taking an Adderall because he's trying to study for a test, and I certainly don't endorse that, but this is a poisoning, a killing. And what people need to understand is every link of the chain is controlled by China. The precursor chemicals that make up fentanyl come from China. 90% of them arrive at the port of Manzanillo in Mexico. Who controls the international terminal in Manzanillo, Mexico? Not an American company, not a Mexican company, a Chinese company. Those precursors are then moved to North Mexico, just along the U.S. southern border, where 2,000 Chinese nationals just happen to be that help the drug cartels take these precursors and mix them into this deadly cocktail. Now they've actually got the fentanyl. But people don't really take fentanyl. They think they're taking something else. You have to lace it into something. You lace it into a fake Vicodin or a fake Adderall. You need pill presses and you need pill molds that make the pills actually look like the real thing, even though they're not. The pill presses and the pill molds come from China. And according to our Department of Homeland Security, China sells it to the drug cartels at cost. They're not even making money doing it. Now that they've got the pills, Governor, they need to distribute them in the United States. They need secure communications. What do the drug cartels use? They use Chinese apps and they use Chinese encryption devices because they know that China will not share the communications of the drug cartels with American law enforcement. And then the final key to the puzzle is the money laundering. Every drug cartel needs to launder money. They used to launder their money through South American banks. The drug cartels now launder their money through Chinese state-owned banks, and they often use Chinese exchange students in the United States on education visas to do so. So this is a Chinese operation. It is revenge for the opium wars, and it is a leading cause of death for people under the age of 45 in the United States. And our president has said literally nothing to President Xi about this.
Is that maybe tied to the fact that his family got $5 million from a company that's owned by the Communist Chinese Party?
Yes.
Is there a connection?
There is. And in fact, it's even a little bit closer than that. In 2017, he got $5 million, Hunter Biden did, from Yi Yiming, a Chinese businessman, an interest-free forgivable loan to the Biden family that, of course, has never been paid. But here's the thing about Yi, the businessman. Not only is he tied to the CCP government, he was business partners with a Chinese gangster named White Wolf.
And White Wolf.
Anytime you get a name like White Wolf, it's not a good sign.
Ain't a good guy.
No, not a good guy. White Wolf is the head of a criminal gang that set up the Sinaloa cartel and the fentanyl trade. So what I'm telling you is there is one degree of separation between the Biden family and the Chinese gang that set up the Mexican drug cartels in the fentanyl trade. And I think that's clearly the reason Joe Biden does not want to raise this issue. Why else would you not raise the fact that 100,000 Americans, that every year we're losing more people that died from Vietnam and every combat death since then, we're losing every year, and he never raises it with President Xi?
We've only got about 30 seconds left, but I cannot end without at least asking for a brief understanding of why it is important that the country push back on the use of the TikTok app.
TikTok, I quote extensively in the book from Chinese propagandists. They say it's the ultimate Trojan horse. They describe in detail how they use TikTok to manipulate young people in the West emotionally. So while we're debating in Washington, D.C., are they, aren't they? They've already made the decision. And ByteDance, the company that controls TikTok, is not just a Chinese company. It is fused to the hip to the Chinese government. The algorithm that drives that app is not just a company secret. The government declared it a state secret, and the company actually does joint research with the Chinese Ministry of State Security, their spy agency, on how to manipulate people online. So if we cannot ban this app, it's pretty much lost.
It's waving a white flag to
exactly
the Chinese.
Right. It's exactly
right. You know, no parent should allow his or her teenager or any child to be on TikTok for the simple reasons. And one of the things that I can tell you about Peter's book, every book that he doesn't just say, I think, I feel, I believe. There is extensive source-related documentation. So read his book, not so you'll say, oh, yeah, I agree with him. Read it because you'll understand where did he get this information and how did he validate it. That's what makes it even more powerful. To order your own copy of Blood Money, Why the Powerful Turn a Blind Eye While China Kills Americans, as well as to keep up with what the Government Accountability Institute is doing to help keep the rest of this country honest, all you got to do is visit Huckabee.tv. Hey, Keith, why don't you tell us who's on deck next?
Well, she's been hailed as the queen of Christian fiction. Karen Kingsbury will be out next, along with actor Scott Reeves, to discuss their brand new movie, Someone Like You, next on Huckabee.
Welcome back. Karen Kingsbury is a number one New York Times bestselling author whose many novels have sold over 25 million copies, and they've been made into major movies and TV shows. Scott Reeves is someone you're probably familiar with. He's the star of such popular shows as Nashville and General Hospital. Now they've joined talents to help bring Karen's inspiring love story, Someone Like You, and they're bringing it to the big screen. Please welcome Karen Kingsbury and Scott Reeves. One of the things that I'm just thrilled about, this is a film that is based on one of your incredible novels, and those have sold so many copies that I think people already are going to say, oh, I've read the book, I want to see the movie. And you know what I've heard, Karen? People are saying that the movie is as good as the book, and that's something you don't always hear.
Well, that's what I think is my favorite part, is God puts the story like a movie on my heart to start with. And now with Someone Like You, it's actually that same movie now on the screen for everyone.
Scott, you've done a lot of television, a lot of movies. What attracted you to the script and what made you want to be a part of this particular project?
Well, first and foremost, Karen. I've been a Karen fan for 20 years. My wife, 20 years ago, talked me into reading one of Karen's books. It was the first book in the Baxter series, and it got me hooked. And I devoured every Karen Kingsbury book from then on. And so when someone like you came along and Karen called, we've been friends for 20 years, and we have been wanting to work together. And when this came up, I jumped at the chance to be it, because I knew anything. The reason the movie is as good as the book is because Karen and her son wrote the movie also. It wasn't some random script writer who came in and wrote it.
They didn't booger up the book
exactly.
When they made it into a movie, which sometimes does happen.
It happens a lot.
And Karen, something that I found just stunning, you and your husband, instead of going to a bunch of investors and they would have their own, you know, sort of fingers in the pie and their spoon in the kitchen with their own spices, you guys took your savings and you financed the production of the movie yourselves. That way you had more control of the content.
Yeah, we just, you know, we walk by a sign that's in our house every single day and it says, just one life. And that's how we live, that, you know, God's given us only a finite number of pages in the story of your life. And so for us, it was, hey, let's do it. What are we going to buy some houses? Like, let's go ahead and make a movie and let's do it the way we want to do it and have the message and the hope be authentically like the book.
But was that scary?
I mean, terrifying.
You guys kind of put everything you've done, you know, you've had a pretty good life and you bet it all on this movie. You know, I mean, that's a risk, a huge risk.
Yeah, I know for us, you know, we've always believed to whom much has been given, much will be expected. And so it was a huge risk. It was terrifying at times because, you know, with a book, you can just write it and you can control the weather and you can cast it. You can find the locations and it's just you and the page. But when it's a movie, everything can go wrong. And truly, we prayed for wisdom and favor every day and God brought it. And we had finished on time, on budget. And I think the movie is one of my favorite things I've ever seen.
That's wonderful. I think we ought to look at a little clip from the movie. It just opened this week. We're going to look at just a little piece of it that I think will make you want to see the film Someone Like You. It's a
beautiful morning. Life can feel serene, and then a single rock breaks the surface.
London?
Sending ripples through all of time.
It's been a hard year.
I'm so sorry.
London was an in vitro baby.
The procedure gave us two embryos.
Saying London might have a sibling?
Hi.
Could we talk?
This is incredible. Are you in love with her?
You can't bring her back.
I could stay here forever.
She's not ours. She's not London.
You're pushing me away.
Every time that I'm with you, I was looking at London all over again.
I can't change the past.
She always wanted me to find someone like you. Thank God I do.
Just watching the trailer makes me definitely want to see the whole film. The plot of the film is pretty intriguing, and it's almost like ripped from the front pages of one of the hottest issues today, intravital fertilization. Give us a synopsis of the plot. What happens? You don't have to give the whole movie away, of course, but I want to tell us why this is such a unique film, because it really is.
And we would have had no idea that it would come out right when the Alabama Supreme Court ruling happened about embryos being people. But I had found out that embryo adoption was a thing. And so that sort of spun this story in my heart. But it's about a young architect, Dawson Gage, and he loses his best friend early on in the movie. His love for her was sort of undying. And his last thing that he could do for her was, he finds out in the grieving, she was born through in vitro fertilization. And so he finds out there was another embryo and it had been donated to someone somewhere. So he wants to find out, like, where is this brother or sister of his friend? And he finds a girl who has no idea that she was adopted as an embryo, and it rocks her world. And as he's kind of walking her through that, he didn't mean to fall in love. Hmm. And, of course, we have Scott, who does the most amazing job as the biological dad, who has lost not just one daughter, but finds the one that they gave away as an embryo, and now has to sort of say goodbye to her, too. It's really his. I mean, Scott, your emotion in this movie has been just tremendous. Like, people are talking about it. Like, this is Academy Award winning performance from Scott.
And Scott, there must have been a serious emotional issue to deal with, just dealing with the plot.
It was. I knew if it was a Karen. First of all, if it was a Karen story and something that Karen and Don were. They were at the helm. I knew it was something I was going to be able to be proud of and dig my teeth into. And because they walked the walk and they put their money where their mouth is.
Yeah.
And so when I saw the character, I was like, oh, wow. You know, I have a daughter that is the same age as my daughter in this movie that we tragically lose. And that was the hardest part about doing this movie was digging into those emotions and personalizing that, you know. But it was also, in Karen's stories, there's redemption and restoration and finding, you know, finding that unimaginable and joy that you that's beyond our comprehension, you know.
Even in tragedy.
Even in the midst of tragedy.
Well, it's in the theaters starting this week, just opened, and someone like you is in theaters nationwide. If you go to Huckabee.tv, we have links to help you find the theater closest to you, as well as so you can buy tickets. Go see the film. Also, to see Karen Kingsbury and her many best-selling books. We'll link you to those as well. Now, we might just need someone like Keith Bilbrey, who will tell us what's coming up next. Keith?
Oh, I'd be glad to. Up next, author Dr. Jeremiah Johnston, and later, quirky news with another installment of In Case You Missed It. That's all ahead on Huckabee.
Welcome back, everybody. You know, I'm visiting with our next guest, and we're both talking about one of the things that makes this show so much fun is the phenomenal music. You hear little snippets of it. We get to hear much more of it. A good reason that you should come and be in our studio audience. It's made such a wonderful difference because of Trey Corley and the Music City Connection. Would you give them a big hand right now? My next guest is a New Testament scholar, commentator, podcaster, foster care and adoption advocate. That's a lot of stuff. His new Amazon top 10 bestseller is a book called The Body of Proof, The 7 Best Reasons to Believe in the Resurrection of Jesus and Why It Matters Today. Please welcome Dr. Jeremiah Johnston.
Thank you, Governor.
It's an honor to have you here.
Great to be with you.
You're one of the busiest guys I think I've ever met. You have so many things going on. I want to briefly just mention that coming off of Easter that we just celebrated, this book is a perfectly timed to remind people that the resurrection is everything.
That's exactly right. The resurrection of Jesus is what gives us a living hope. This word hope is mentioned 100 times in the New Testament, and it's all because Jesus Christ came out of that grave physically alive. And that is something we celebrate every week. Every day is Resurrection Day for the Christian.
Well, it's not only a great book, but you also have a supplement to it, The Body of Proof, a study guide. So
that's
it can
right.
be a great class study for a Sunday school class or a small group. And we'll have links to that for people.
Thank you.
But I want to talk about something that you're doing in Dallas coming up. And it's I've never heard of anything quite like this. It's a massive conference, and it's called Chosen.
That's right.
And it's about the vast number of kids in this country who either are waiting for adoption or they're orphaned, or they need foster care.
That's
How big
right.
an issue is this?
This is an emergency summit that we're hosting at Prestonwood Baptist Church in Dallas, Texas, where God has a second home, ladies and gentlemen. Emergency summit focused on the 400,000 U.S. citizens under the age of 18 right now in the foster care system in the United States. 400,000, 100,000 right now. One out of four waiting for their forever family. We take this very seriously. With the people of God, there is no such thing as an unwanted child. We believe both at Prestonwood and at this emergency conference, every child is a wanted child.
Who's this conference for? Is it for pastors, or is it for Sunday school teachers or social workers? Who needs to sign up and be there?
Everyone needs to be part of this conference, because if you love Jesus Christ, if you believe in the power of the resurrection of Jesus Christ, you believe in Christian ethics, and everyone can do something. We're going to empower pastors. I'm so thankful Governor Greg Abbott is going to be there. A lot of people don't realize Governor Abbott's daughter, Audrey, is adopted. We have Corey and Sadie Robertson's there, the Duck Dynasty family. They've adopted and fostered children. So we have great influential speakers who are intimately acquainted with the details related to foster care and adoption, but we also want to equip local church pastors. You think about it, Governor Huckabee. 353,000 congregations in the United States. If every church had a foster care adoption ministry, we wouldn't have this issue, right? Mm. And so we want to encourage pastors. So we want to invite pastors to be part of it. We want to encourage Christians. I've learned so much on behalf of our church in this conference about what a critical need this is. We want to encourage Christians to build their awareness. And of course, we want to encourage families, big families, to continue to grow in this area of adoption and foster care. You know, Audrey and I have 5 children, Governor.
Yeah.
We went from 2 to 5. We have triplets that are 7 years old. So I haven't slept in 7 years, ladies and gentlemen, until the motel tonight, which I'm excited about. We care about families. And, you know, in Mark chapter 9, verse 36 and 37, Jesus was asked, who's the greatest? Yeah. And do you remember what he did, Governor? He brought a child into the middle of the room. And he said, unless you receive a child, this is what it means to receive the kingdom of God. So if you really want to be great for God in his eyes, take care of the vulnerable, take care of the children, take care of those who can't take care of themselves.
You know, we're both pro-life, very adamant about that, and believe that there's no such thing as a disposable or expendable child. But the burden of the pro-life movement is that with more states putting restrictions, thankfully, hopefully, fewer abortions, but that also means that some of these babies that will be born are going to be born to mothers who may really rather turn them over to someone else to raise.
Amen.
So how big an issue is it for us as pro-life people to also embrace the fullness of life, not just up until they're born, but beyond that for their future?
That's right. And we applaud these courageous mothers who have these babies and then partner with adoptive families. We want to affirm them. They are courageous. And right in the state of Texas, and I know you're aired globally, but by way of illustration, in Texas, we've had 10,000 additional baby births, thankfully. And yet with that becomes a great responsibility. And remember the most dangerous words. Remember what Ronald Reagan said? It's the government. I'm here to help. Those are very dangerous words.
Dangerous
we believe
words.
The church is the greatest force for good on planet Earth. So as Christians, we need to show up and say, yes, we're pro-life. That means we care about every baby, but we also care about life from the womb to the tomb. Amen? And we want to be part of seeing this solution met where we can encourage families so they can be a part. We want to invite people to come to this conference on April 13. But if you can't come to the great nation of Texas, we are streaming it as well, Governor. So you can be part of this conference from all over the world. All you have to do is go to pressonwood.org/chosen. Let us encourage you. Let us affirm you. Let us equip you and resource you to stand up and be part of the solution.
I think it's an extraordinary thing you're doing. I've never heard of any other church that's sponsoring something of this magnitude with the breadth of what you're doing in the Chosen Conference. And I hope that people will sign up. Dr. Johnson has given you a clear way to do it, but we're going to make it easy for you if you'll visit Huckabee.tv. We'll not only help you have a link to Dr. Johnson's new book, Body of Proof, also tickets to the April 13th Chosen Conference at Prestonwood Baptist Church in Plano, Texas, just north of Dallas. Speaking of Chosen, I've chosen Keith Bilbrey to tell us what's coming up on the show. Here he goes.
I feel honored.
Stay close, because in case you missed it is next. Then music from Billy Gaines. That's all ahead on Huckabee. Huckabee.tv and get your very own made in the USA Huckabee mugs, t-shirts, and more.
Well, from bad romances to cola swilling donkeys, we got the news that'll make your tummy tingle on In Case You All right, February brought us Valentine's Day, a holiday celebrating romance. But there isn't a holiday to commemorate romances that, well, may have gone sour. Luckily, some people are inventing creative ways to tell that special person, boy, am I glad to get rid of you. Here's a for instance. A car scrapping company in Great Britain had a Valentine promotion called Scrap Your Ex. Applicants could go online and say why their ex deserved to be junked. And the winners got photos of a car with their former crush's name on it, painted on the car, getting crushed for real and dumped into the junkyard.
Oh, that's...
That's cruel, isn't it?
That's pretty...
You know, Keith, I'm shocked that Taylor Swift hasn't already written a song about this.
Well, Carrie Underwood. Yeah.
Did she?
She did that song before he cheats about smashing her ex's truck with a baseball bat.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, she's a do-it-yourselfer.
Yeah.
Anyway, the company described the Scrap Your Ex promotion as cathartic.
Okay. Anybody got a dictionary?
These folks could probably write for this show. They could write as poorly as we do. Anyway. All right. TheSmokingGun.com brings us a Hux criminal mastermind from Calgary, Canada. You know, drug dealers always give you the first sample free. Well, this guy took the free sample idea literally. Police raided his house and they found a box of business cards. And stapled to each card was a tiny Ziploc baggie of cocaine.
Oh,
That was his staple product. Okay. Yeah.
Took me a while, but
yeah, you got it. The cards all had the fake name Alex Lee, but here's what's crazy: it had his real address on the card. I suspect he'd been sampling the merchandise himself.
Uh-huh.
You know, I keep telling people, you can't get away with stuff this obvious unless you use the name Hunter Biden. Then you're clear. All right. Next, we turn to the animal kingdom. In Devon, England, a donkey named Joey developed a severe stomach blockage. To save his life, vets fed him 6 liters of full sugar cola a day for 4 days. You know what that did?
What?
It dissolved the blockage like a drain cleaner.
I'll have to remember. Ooh,
something to think about if you drink a lot of cola. Hey, Trey, you drink a lot of cola, don't you?
Not too bad. I mean, a little bit.
Well, they say things go better with Coke. And it did help him go.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know, they warn this should only be done under a vet's supervision, and you should never give cola to a healthy donkey, no matter how much he begs for it when you take him to the movies.
I'm glad to know that.
Yeah, you'll keep that in mind. All right, finally, our video of the week. Watch closely because this happens really fast. A car was backing up in the snow when a puppy ran behind it, but he was saved by Superdog. Let's see that again in slow motion. Can we do it? Here we go. You see the puppy? Now look at the dog. What a save.
Oh, man.
That is wonderful. This is why I love dogs, sometimes more than people, because they're better than most people.
That's right.
Anyway, that's not an In Case You Missed It story. My friend, that is a Hux Hero story. And on that heroic note, we're going to wrap this up. But until next time, remember, we read the news.
So you don't have to.
Woo! Well, up next, it's a great night that we're going to chat and a string performance from gospel singer Billy Gaines right here on Huckabee.
Next week with special guest for King and Country and actress Candace Cameron Bure.
Welcome back. Billy Gaines is a 2-time Dove Award-winning singer-songwriter. He's got top 10 hits with his late wife, Sarah, like Always Triumphant and Come Drink at My Table. They topped the contemporary Christian and R&B charts. They hit number 1 6 times. They made it look easy, but it wasn't always easy. Their true story is in his inspiring memoir called Other Side of This Trial. Please give a very warm welcome to Billy Gaines. Billy, nice to have you with us.
Thank you, Jeff. I'm so good to be here.
Other Side of This Trial is not just the name of your memoir, but it's the name of a song that you're going to do for us a little later.
Yes, sir.
But your story is not one of, oh, I came to know Jesus and my life has just been one great big thrill ride with no problems. Hadn't been quite like that.
Not at all.
So what has been some of the bumpy parts of the life?
Well, the bumpy parts for me were the losses and, you know, the grief that I've gone through. And it seems like in some ways that sadness had conspired to try to destroy me. But the wonderful part of it all is that God, in all those situations, gave me victory.
Hmm.
Not only that, he revealed to me the purpose of those things. And I have really, you know, this isn't a biography, but it is a chronicle of God's interventions in my life that I put together and connected the dots. And the closer I looked at it, I realized that he was there with me in ways that I couldn't have even imagined before.
You know, Billy, what you just said, I think, is so profound, and maybe people missed it. But God showed you why.
Yes.
It wasn't just that he was there.
Yes.
But why you went through some of these very difficult times. And a lot of people never even look to see the why. They just say, here's the what, and it's very unpleasant. God showed you the why.
Yes,
is that what gave you the capacity to get through it?
And it really is, because, you know, ultimately, if we go through things, we don't learn anything. You know, if we're chastised, we don't realize what in the world we did wrong, you know. Yeah. Or like when I got hit by a bicycle, you know, hit by a car on my bicycle, one of the greatest lessons I learned was about obeying my parents.
Hmm.
If I'd only been obedient and stayed in the house, like my mom told me to, I would have not nearly lost my life that night. But, you know, it's things like that that I have garnered a lot of truth and principles from that I've lived out.
You have been celebrated for having one of the most wonderful, smooth voices in the music business, and people who hear your voice feel that you're communicating with a level of warmth that very few vocalists have. And that's one of the reasons we're so very happy to have you here. But I think when people hear the message of the song, Other Side of This Trial, they'll have a better connection and they'll know who Billy Gaines really is. We're so happy to have you here. So, Keith, while Billy gets ready to sing for us, I want you to tell the viewers how they can keep up with Billy Gaines and get this song, because they're going to want to. It is a good one.
Go to Huckabee.tv to follow Billy on social media and to watch an exclusive digital performance of his song, Other Side of This Trial. Now, performing Blood Washed with Trey Corley and the Music City Connection, here's Billy Gaines.
Somebody asked me, what has happened to you? For lack of a better term, I'd say you were brand new. Cause you don't walk the way that you used to. You don't talk the way that you used to. What on earth could bring such drastic change? I say that it's the blood of Jesus. His Holy Spirit frees us and leaves our whole world totally rearranged. Said I've been bloodwashed, I've been born again. Remade, I've been saved from sin. I've been renewed, I've been transformed. But no longer will I conform to this world's way, to these evil days. See, now this will never face. I've been down to copper's crimson flood. My soul has been washed in Jesus' blood. Now somebody told me that I would not last. They give me a few more days, the thrill would surely pass. They said you'll soon come back to your senses, turn back to what you've been missing. Because I've seen your kind and they all turn around. I said that my friend, you are mistaken. My faith cannot be shaken, because I anchored deep in Jesus' solid ground. Said I've been blood washed, I've been born again. Remade, I've been saved from sin. I've been renewed, I've been transformed. No longer will I conform to this world's way, to these evil days. See, now there's a never face. I've been down to Calvary's crimson blood. My soul has been washed in Jesus' clean blood.
I've been born again.
Oh, I've been born again.
I've been born again. never face.